Today's episode is sponsored by TrueLearn. TrueLearn has smart banks of practice questions for a wide variety of high-stakes examinations. Are you a med student? They have smart banks for step 1 and 2. Are you a resident in the field of internal medicine, emergency medicine, or anesthesiology? They have you covered with smart banks for the exams you will encounter along your journey. But this is not only for physicians. PAs and NPs can prepare for their exams using TrueLearn as well. They can even help nurses prepare for the NCLEX. Click the link in the show notes for a discount by using the code EddieJoeMD25. Crush your upcoming exams by using TrueLearn. Welcome to the Saving Lives podcast. For historical context, today is the 25th of August of 2022. The article that I'm going to be using as a reference for this podcast episode is, believe it or not, over a year old now. It was published on the 5th of August of 2021 in the New England Journal of Medicine. You see, the reason why I find this article kind of funny, it's just the way it is that usually institutions are either designated a Meronone shop or a dobutamine shop. Although the truth is, you know, a lot of us have a mixed shop. It seems that most institutions are accustomed to using only one or the other in patients with cardiogenic shock. Some argue that Meronone is better, while some argue that dobutamine is better. It's always funny to me the people who think they know all the answers, but do we really know the answer? Well, the question was formally posed and published late in 2021 in the New England Journal of Medicine, as I mentioned. But was it really answered? I keep on repeating this because I'm asking myself this as I'm reading this article. Hat tip to the authors, download the article for yourself. It is completely free. This is not medical advice. And as I always say, do not trust me. So what they went ahead and did is randomize 192 patients in total, and these patients were in cardiogenic shock. They were to receive either Meronone or dobutamine as their primary inotrope. To get a little bit of basic science and med school, nursing school, pharmacy school, etc., when we discuss Meronone, we have to remember that the mechanism of action is that it is a phosphodiesterase 3 inhibitor. This means that it increases cardiac inotropy, lusitropy, as well as peripheral vasodilation. In case this is the first time that you hear this word, lusitropy, the definition is the rate of myocardial relaxation. Given that Meronone increases inotropy and causes peripheral vasodilation, in clinical practice we see that the patient's cardiac index, as expected, increases and the systemic vascular resistance decreases. This is dependent on the patient many times. Sometimes this decrease in SVR, also known as systemic vascular resistance, means that Meronone needs to bring along a friend, and that friend is named norepinephrine. On the other hand, dobutamine is a catecholamine. It works as a beta-1 and beta-2 agonist. In turn, this improves a patient's cardiac output. Some clinicians may prefer Meronone because it is said to be better than dobutamine at improving right heart function or right ventricular function and pulmonary artery pressures. It is also said that dobutamine has an adverse effect of increasing the heart rate, therefore causing more arrhythmias and increasing myocardial oxygen consumption. The trial set out to sort all these theories. Now, I always recommend that you look at the baseline characteristics between the two groups in this trial and in any trial. When I looked over it briefly, nothing really caught my eye here regarding the baseline characteristics. I looked at the median ejection fraction, and in both groups, this was 25%. The majority of causes of ventricular dysfunction was due to ischemia. I found it interesting that they stratified patients in cardiogenic shock based on the definition provided by the Society for Cardiovascular Angiography and Interventions. This is an organization called SCAI, S-C-A-I. You may be hearing more from them in the near future as they have a bunch of goodies coming up. I've covered these different definitions of cardiogenic shock on both my Instagram accounts, website, YouTube, etc. And I've made it one of these 1-minute videos because that's how long it takes to learn these definitions. But aside from that, these patients had a baseline cardiac index of less than 1.8. Generally speaking, I want my patients to have a cardiac index greater than 2.4. But, you know, given that I don't take care of the healthy patients, usually I get away with a cardiac index of 2.2, making me pretty happy. The other thing is that the majority of these patients did not have a PA catheter. I've explained before why I'm a fan of a Swan-Ganz catheter, but that's neither here nor there. The primary outcome is a composite outcome with numerous parameters included in it, seems to be a trend now in order to find statistical significance in different trials to just combine a whole bunch of goodies and make it a composite trial. But when we go ahead and look at the individual components of this composite endpoint, composite primary outcome, this included in-hospital death, cardiac arrest, need for mechanical circulatory support, and a whole bunch of other factors that, if I went ahead and mentioned it to you here, you'd probably fall asleep. Can't keep track of it. There were just too many. But when you look at it all, there was no difference between the two groups. No difference between the Mironone and no difference with the dobutamine. So they did what any great authors would do and try to tease out some benefits in a subgroup analysis of this primary outcome. So this is where they looked at age and different other factors to see, hey, is in this certain subset of patients, is the Mironone going to be better or is the dobutamine going to be better? And although there appears to be a trend in some of these subsets where Mironone is better, we need to be academically honest with ourselves and be aware that trends don't mean anything. Therefore, we cannot make any determination. An example of this is for cardiogenic shock that was primarily right heart based, right side based. With a sample size of only 8 patients in each group, this is not powered appropriately to make a determination of whether Mironone or dobutamine is better. Then when we go ahead and look at the secondary outcomes, these were also quite numerous. This is where you could find the length of stay, which there was no difference. Time receiving inotropes, no difference here. Well, if you look at all the secondary outcomes, and again, they were plentiful, there were no differences in any of them. If you can imagine it, well, pretty much, there was no difference in it. Then due to the faster metabolism of dobutamine with a half-life of just 2 minutes versus greater than 2 hours in Mironone, I personally would have figured that there would have been a difference in length of stay or total time receiving inotropes with Mironone taking longer to, you know, keep the patients in the ICU and staying on inotropes. But this was definitely not the case here. There was no difference in the endpoints looking at this as well. I went ahead and actually posted this a couple weeks ago on Instagram, and people asked me about arrhythmias. There tends to be a thought process, if I could say so, that dobutamine leads to more arrhythmias than Mironone. The data, however, shows that there was no difference between Mironone and dobutamine with regards to arrhythmias. All in all, there was no difference between Mironone and dobutamine in cardiogenic shock. I did learn something from Dr. Benjamin Miller, who is a neurointensivist that I've been in contact with for years, and he taught me that Mironone is used commonly in patients with subarachnoid hemorrhages, you know, due to its vasodilator properties. There was a pharmacist named Joy Stewart who asked me a valid question regarding the practice patterns of patients with end-stage renal disease, to which I don't know the answer because that subset was not studied here. Manny Alfonso also brought up a good point regarding cost. So I went down the rabbit hole for about 45 seconds on this and looked the price up on UpToDate and found that Mironone costs between 18 to 40 cents per milliliter. Dobutamine is less expensive when you compare cc per cc at being between 6 to 19 cents per milliliter. You know, I don't know how many milliliters is, for example, 3.75 of Mironone compared to 5 of dobutamine. I just don't know that. Also, you know, how many cc's will it take to reach therapeutic effect? So I really can't tell you which one's cheaper or not. Definitely not digging into this for that pod, digging into all that for this podcast. And I'm also not going to touch up on the whole dosing scheme of Mironone with a 10-foot pole. You know, why did they pick the 0.125, 0.25, 0.35, 3.75, etc. I mean, I just don't know why we do that, but that's a conversation for a different day. All in all, I thank you all for supporting the podcast. Thanks for bearing with me. Thanks for supporting my new sponsor as they were like the business, good people over there, and definitely appreciate your support. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great day. Bye.